This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
Now, you've just released your debut album, self-titled The Rubens. So exciting. So many people have picked this up already. How does it feel to have your music so quickly just accepted?
Yeah, it's a bit insane. Yeah, I suppose we've only been a band for sort of 18 months or so, and to have it up there on the iTunes and we're kind of just really blown away by how popular it is, really. We don't think, you know, or anything special or anything, so it's just really insane for us.
How did the story begin for you guys? Because as you say, it's only 18 months. You formed in February last year, and it's just been a whirlwind.
Yeah, well, the band's made up of three brothers, Sam, Elliot, and Zach. And I went to school with Sam. He's in the same year, and so basically, we just formed a band at home. We all live in the same town, so we started writing music together, and a snowball effect, really. We played a couple of simple gigs and then all of a sudden we started going over to New York and doing some crazy things, and here we are. It's a bit weird.
Very weird. Now, one of those crazy things was recording the debut album in New York. Like, that is just the story that you hear so many times of what people would love to be able to do. And for you guys, it happened. How did that come about?
Well, we actually, it doesn't have anything to do with us. Basically, we knew a guy from home in Camden who was going to record our album down the south coast, and he's actually he's a producer down in Melbourne, and he won got awarded this scholarship to go to France, and so he met with some really big mixers over there, Brower and David Kahn, who he basically dropped out tracks to them over there in France, and then David asked, you know, who are these guys and stuff like that. And asked if we could come over to New York in his studio. So basically, by knowing Dean led us to David. And then while we're in New York, David had all these contacts with American management and with lawyers and stuff like that. So it's just, we're just being like blessed with just the best, you know, people. And just they're awesome. So I suppose, you know, there's been, you know, some good writing there, some good music, but it really comes down to some hard luck. So
Yeah. That time in New York, what was it like for you guys? Because there's the excitement and the pressure, I suppose, of putting out your first album. But then also because it's happening in New York and because that would just be such overwhelming experience, what was it like for you in amongst those few months where you were doing that?
Well, it was really exciting. The first 2 days, we got to, you know, do a bit of sightseeing and things like that, just settling down, getting over a bit of jet lag. And then basically we just worked flat out for two and a half months or so. And so we lived on 2nd Avenue in 18th. And we'd walk for an hour to the studio each day. And I actually lost a fair bit of weight, which is rare for being in America. We lived on a really tight budget. We were on $10 a day.
That is so tight. Yeah. Four guys over in the States. You did well to survive.
It was crazy. And that's hard for me because I eat a lot. So we'd walk there every day. We spent about a month in rehearsal studios, just going over the songs and making sure they're perfect before we went to the studio. And then we spent, about another month in the recording studios at Avatar, which was amazing.
Yeah.
It was the best facility. It's unbelievable.
Was there a standout moment for you in that recording and just being in New York that just is going to be forever etched in your memory?
Well, I think the night before I started tracking drums was probably, I didn't really sleep much because I was kind of stressed. But getting that over and done with was definitely the best thing. Like going in there and I reckon I could count about 50 mics on the drums. It was just massive.
Wow.
And I was just kind of like, wow, what are we doing? This is actually real. So it was unbelievable.
So exciting to see. And it's exciting actually to just see the response to the album so far. Obviously, two tracks on it, My Gun and the first one, Lay It Down, were real standouts to the audience. Were there ones that were standouts to you?
Yeah, well, I suppose Lay It Down, I always have a soft spot for that one because that's the one that got us, our popularity. And I have this like soft spot for that because, you know, that's what got us everything. So, but I suppose with My Gun, I'm kind of getting over that track because it gets played a fair bit. I suppose when we're playing live, I like Don't Ever Want to Be Found, which is a really fun track. And we usually get someone up to play tambourine and dance around a bit. So that's a lot of fun. And I think the first song on the album, Best We Got, is really catchy. So yeah, I'd probably go with those two.
It's a bit of a risk, I reckon, getting people up on stage in a show. Like, a lot of artists do it. They're doing the tambourine, they, you know, guest singers and all that kind of stuff. Has it gone wrong any time for you guys? Because there's so many possibilities.
Yeah, well, I think it was in Brisbane, and I was basically teaching the... No, well, sorry, it wasn't in... It was in... It was,
some place within Australia.
Yeah, yeah. I was teaching them basically as I was playing the drums, and I have to play these like 16 notes while I'm, you know, and I'm trying to teach him how to play it because he wasn't playing it properly.
Yeah.
And it was fine. Like, it's not mic'd or anything. So, I know, it's just really for show. So,
yeah.
It doesn't matter too much.
Just a bit of fun.
Yeah.
And how have you seen the audience responding to your shows so far? You're doing a national tour at the moment, almost sort of over halfway through it, I guess.
Well, it's actually the official tour actually ended yesterday, but we've added some regional shows to it. So it's still sort of going, but the tour with Bertie Blackman and New Gods has finished. But it's been really good. Everything's been sold out, which is amazing, and we just can't believe it. We've been able to see some really cool places around Australia and get to meet some really nice people. It's been really good.
And does the name have any significance, the Rubens? Because given there is three brothers, the last name is not the Rubens. Where did it come from?
We always get asked this question. Basically, there's more brothers. So there's Sam, Elliot, and Zach, but there's another brother, Jethro. And Sam, the lead singer, he would nickname Jethro Ruben at the time. And I actually teach him drums, and because he wasn't old enough, and he didn't want to be in the band, we decided to name the band after his nickname, Ruben. So that's where that comes from.
Nice, I like that. A little bit of acknowledgement there. Yeah. Does he want to be part of the band now, though, seeing how fun it's been for you guys?
Yeah, I think he does. But, you know, he's really into sport and soccer and stuff like that, so... you know, he's happy where he is and what he's doing. He's doing his HSC, I think, at the moment. So, yeah, there is an element where he wants to be in there. We actually get him to play sometimes. So we've had him play, floor toms and stuff at shows, which he really likes. So
yeah, I think it was an interview with Sam and Elliot that I read recently that was talking about their little brother Jethro, mentioning that if he was to come in and be part of the band, he would be just so overwhelmed by the nature of the road. I think it was Sam who actually said debauchery of the road, things like that. Has that been something you've encountered so far, and how have you handled it?
Well, I think it's a lot of fun with it's hard sort of living out of a suitcase. The boys actually share a room in Menangle, so they really like being away on tour because they actually live in more luxury than they do at home.
They get another square foot on the edge of the bed.
Yeah, nice. Well, they live with three bunk beds sort of thing, so yeah. It's quite funny when you walk into their room. But yeah, I suppose being on the road, being in the van's a lot of fun, just watching movies and things like that. I don't actually get to watch much because I'm usually driving or William's driving.
Designated driver, yes.
That's right.
Someone's got to do
it. Dezzo. So William Zeglis is our bass player. And so me and him are the only ones that can drive manual.
Mm.
So we
That's a good skill to have.
It is a good skill. And you'd think that most people would have that. But the boys don't. So that's all right.
So you're never going to be put out of the band and the little brother coming in because they need you to drive.
Yeah,
because
he
plays drums
right.
as well, right?
unless Jet, you know, he learns how to drive a manual car.
Just keep him away from it so that day never comes.
Yeah, I know.
It's going to be good. Now, for you in particular in the band, there's a faith element for you behind, I guess, well, not just your music, but your life.
Yeah, that's
how have you seen that play out in the music and in the sort of that industry so far?
Yeah, I definitely, take God wherever I go. So being in those sort of situations where, you know, there's a lot of, pressure to try things, you get free rider and all that sort of thing. So, alcohol is a big, big thing there. But like I sort of go in there with, with God there and sort of, being myself, I've always been someone that can, you know, walk into a pub and just relate to people and, you know, meet them where they're at. I don't like the whole Bible bashing or anything like that. Just try to be myself and, have God by my side type thing. So I guess having the pressure of, like, girls and things like that, like, some of them are a bit gnarly, throw themselves at you and things like that. So there's definitely, like, these pressures and temptations that you walk through each day. But I suppose I just sort of pray about it, and talk to some good Christian mates, which is really good to have that.
How do you approach the opportunity? Like, do you approach it as I'm a Christian going into the music industry, or are you first a musician, but then you're also a Christian getting to have that influence as well?
I would definitely say that I'm first a Christian. When I go into any situation, I'm into a lot of sports, so I'm not just a musician. I like all sorts of things. So I suppose wherever I go, that's like my focus. I don't want to take anything away from that. And I suppose I always want to be like a positive influence on people, whether they believe in God, whether they want to or they're interested. I just I hope that I can be someone that can be like a bridge. If they want to talk about it, they can. If, you know, they might look back in 40 years or whatever and say, oh, Scott was an all right guy or whatever. But I think going there with like a motive to like talk to everyone about God is just like, I think can turn a lot of heads and actually turn them off Christianity in some way. So yeah, I more want to be a positive influence and say, and I think there's a stereotype about Christians that sort of says, oh yeah, they're boring people, or they're crazy, you know.
We're boring or crazy, awesome.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're actually quite normal.
Is it just everyday nature to you, or have you kind of had really key moments where you've gone, this is a moment where I've had to step up in my faith?
Most of the time, it's, I suppose, second nature. But after you've been away for a while, like, say, like a few weeks or a month, you start to, you know, you're slipping in swear words and things like that. Just little things, like, and you just sort of just catch yourself. And I think that's good to be, like, aware of it, because you don't want to be influenced by the world sort of thing. So it does get hard when, you know, every single person around you is just, you know, of things of the world. So, but I'm, it's not like they're, you know, they're pressuring me and they're pushing me into things. It's not like that at all. They all respect like what I believe and like my managers and things like that. They always, you know, ask me, you know, will Scott be all right with this? And so say for an idea for a video clip, they'd ring me and said, you know, is this all right? So it's really cool. Like they really respect me, and I don't think, in no ways do they think that I'm some, loser or, they treat me any differently like that. They treat me like a normal person. So that's really good.
It's nice to see that respect, because I don't imagine in like years gone by it would have existed so much in the industry in the same way.
Yeah, yeah. That's for sure.
Yeah.
I think if you come across as like someone who is kind of genuine, it's easier. But if you're sort of someone who is telling everyone, you know, you shouldn't behave like that and you shouldn't do this and here's the Bible, read this verse, they're not going to like you too much. So I suppose just using the approach in the music industry just to be like humble and just friendly is much better.
Yeah. We're talking to Scott Baldwin on Nights on Hope 103.2. I want to get back into the music. The debut album, The Rubens, has been just picked up worldwide pretty much now. There's US attention as well. It's kind of, yeah, you laugh because it is just kind of phenomenal to see it happening so quickly and so readily. With the music that goes onto the album, such a strong lyrical content is there. Where does that inspiration come from for you guys?
Well, Sam's actually responsible for all the lyrical content. He says that most of it's fictional and like not really from his past or anything like that. So I think he's just quite witty and, you know, writes some pretty tasteful lyrics. But yeah, I think there's some songs on there that have some good meaning to them, and something that a lot of people can relate to, which is really important because you want people to buy your music. So I think it just comes from, a lot of the songs are written about love and relationships and things like that, which I think everybody sort of relates to. So yeah, it's just all fictional.
Nice, because some of the stuff you're like, I wonder if that is real life, and if it is, that's a really hard thing to go through. But then I suppose those are the moments that allow you to identify with such a broad group of people.
Well, that's right. The song Lay It Down that got us our sort of exposure. There's a couple of people that would write to us an email. Can we play this at our wedding? Mm. And it's quite funny because they actually interpret that song as a love song, and it's actually about a breakup, and why you're feeling this way is because of you, and why you feel so down is because of you.
Yeah.
And we're just like, oh no, you actually, you're listening this, listening to this down your wedding.
Yeah, it's like one of the risks of any song is that it's not going to be interpreted how you wrote it. Although sometimes that could be a good thing, I suppose.
Yeah, well, let's hope so.
Yeah, you never know.
Because these people have actually walked down the aisle and we hope they're okay.
Yeah, exactly. Just look at it in years to come and see how it went.
That's right.
I was actually really interested by some of the comments that audiences and listeners have already had so far. Online, there's people saying they absolutely love it. They heard your music last year, and it has been one of their favourite and most iconic albums of the year. Like, they're pretty big things to be saying about any band. How does it feel to have them say that about you? And do you feel like a responsibility with the music to, like, live up to these people's expectations?
It's totally weird. Like, I don't know how to sort of describe it. It is just, it blows my mind. I suppose, like, after we came back from New York, we had this album written, and we already had sort of some sort of, you know, vibe happening here in Australia. And then now our album's out, everyone sort of, well, not everyone, but most people sort of like this. And so when we tour, me personally, and I think this is the same for the boys, is we're trying to not ruin our reputation. So basically the only live drumming experience I've ever had is, you know, at youth and church. And it's nothing compared to when you're playing in front of a lot of people. So we're kind of just not, we're trying to not stuff up what we've got. So.
Yeah, it's a big thing.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't think you're going to stuff it up anytime soon. And I don't even think down the track. I think you're doing really well.
Well, thanks.
And we'll see. Has it been a steep learning curve? Like you say, that transition from backyard to, you know, main stage?
Yeah, absolutely. When we were in New York, like for me, you know, learning to play, like, it's tight as anything to a click, and with everyone playing in that studio environment, like, taught me a lot. And I'm constantly learning when we're playing live and just getting tips off other drummers and off other musicians. And yeah, for all of us, we're just, you know, we're going from basically playing to three people to playing to, you know, 1600. So it's really, we have to be sort of on our game. So it's sort of fun, like, learning that fast. Mm.
Do you remember the first shows? Because like you say, now you're playing to so many. Take us back to one of the first shows.
I think the first show we ever played was at Candy's apartment in King's Cross. And basically, the only people that were there was our family. And so it was kind of embarrassing.
The loyal supporters are always there. You got to call them up for every gig and be like, please come, mum, dad, friends, now.
That's right. If you're true friends, you'll be there. So they all rocked up.
The blackmail
begins.
All
three of them. And I suppose the biggest crowd we sort of played to was at Splendor. So I think it's a 5,000 tent or something.
Mm.
But they generate interest from all these other artists that are at the festival. So, but we were really happy to have that many people there to watch us on a Sunday afternoon. Our biggest show, I think, was that we actually generated was the Forum, which was amazing. It's a really nice venue down in Melbourne. And I think that's 1,500.
But that's, like, fantastic to see.
It's awesome. It's a lot of fun to play there.
And you've been invited to play New Zealand at the end of the year as well. Is this the first international show for you guys?
Yeah, that's right. So we're playing with the Black Keys, which is actually 5,000 stadium and a 10,000 stadium. So I'll be hopefully wearing a good pair of underwear or something.
You need the stylist to help with that. Yeah. You want a good shirt, good set of jeans, and the shoes. The shoes are always important for any band, I think.
I actually bought a nice pair of shoes.
Are these boots, like good boots?
Oh, no, they were like Jack London, like, what do they call them? Some people actually call them Pentecostal minister shoes because...
Oh, you have to, like, no, you got to, like, reinvent them, scuff them up a little bit.
Yeah, I have actually. Like, the boys actually stand on them a bit and rough them up with their shoes. So
nice.
Otherwise, I just play in Vans.
Nice, I like that. And no one really sees behind the kit, I suppose.
I know, no one actually looks at the drummer.
Not so much, unless you like bust out a foot up the side or something like that.
That's
you never
know.
Now, we've talked about it before. You guys started out in the Triple J Unearth competition. You've been moving across into a more commercial sort of thing. For some bands, that transition from being like the indie sort of subculture band to moving into commercial is like
uncool.
So not okay. Yeah, exactly, uncool. How do you guys approach it? Do you mind?
We're sort of... We don't advertise anything on our Facebook or anything like that about being mainstream or getting played on, like, those stations. So we're still trying to stay what you call cool.
Yeah.
But
what
I suppose we get a bit of flack from some people. We get inboxes saying it's a shame I actually heard you on blah blah station.
Mm.
And but I don't know. That's, I suppose you're getting for for one person that you might lose, you might gain 20 people. It's sort of, if you're going to make it, you kind of need to be mainstream. I think you can still be mainstream and still be cool. Like the Kings of Leon did it really well. And I think we look up to them a lot. And hopefully, you know, we won't be seen as like some little pop band. And we still have some cred.
Yeah, well, surely if you've got something good to say, and I think in a lot of your songs you do, it's going to translate no matter what audience you're bringing it to. And I don't know, you'd think that the original fans would be like, you know what, these guys are so great that more people should know about them.
Well, that's what most people do, so let's hope that like continues.
Yeah, now thank you so much for joining us, Scott. Just a couple of questions as we finish up. When you look back on this in however many years' time it is that you're reflecting on the day of the Rubens, what for you will mean that it was a success?
Oh, that's such a hard question.
Sorry, finishing with the big one.
Well, I guess the experience. Like, at the moment, I'm, you know, able to, you know, see Australia at the moment and hopefully see the world. So, and it's just, like, so much fun, like, meeting new people and just having people love your music. And, like, if that's not an experience, well, I don't know what really is. So, it's definitely a success already. So, yeah, hopefully I'll just keep learning and there'll be more good things to come.
Absolutely. And has anyone ever told you you look like Chris Hemsworth? Just putting it out there.
You have to. I think I've had a few people say that.
Okay. Grow a ponytail and get the like huntsman, the whatever he did. Yes. Yeah. No one in the huntsman outfit. Done. Okay. And maybe you need to dye your hair a little bit more blonde.
All right.
Just a little bit.
I'll just spend some time in the sun.
Yes.
Okay.
Deal. Scott, thank you so much for chatting with us. Really
Thanks,
appreciate
Laura.
It.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening. Start your day with Life Words. Subscribe to Hope 1032's free daily email devotional at hope1032.com.au.